The 11th Gene Key. The transformational path of the 11th Gene Key moves from obscurity to light, and it's the path of idealism. Well, I've been looking forward to this one. It's a powerful wake-up call for many of us in the so-called New Age, because here we have the shadow of obscurity and the gift of idealism. And you can perhaps feel the connection between these two words, obscurity and idealism. When does idealism become obscure? And when does it shine out with light? Obscurity is about being lost in the clouds. It's about being lost in the details, in the trivia, in the miasmas of the mind and its beliefs. Obscurity refers to an obscuration of the inner light, whereas idealism is a dynamic, creative and self-enriching process. So the dilemma of this transformational path, it's a good one, it's belief. And this is a word that we must understand correctly, because we sometimes say, I believe in myself, which is a good thing. That's an affirmation of one's own integrity. But then there's the idea also of belief as a rigid inner mechanism for coping with life. And it was Carl Jung who said it best, I think, in a famous interview where the interviewer probed him, Mr. Jung, does this mean that you believe in God? To which the great man replied, I don't believe, I know. So the 11th shadow, it's really about fluffiness. It's about believing your own or someone else's propaganda. And at the shadow frequency, we're easily led into other people's obscurity, into their belief systems, which may have been woven into elaborate systems or methodologies. Institutionalized religion is a net of beliefs designed, quite beautifully in a way, to lift us out of our fears and give us an ideal to strive for. It's a noble goal, but unfortunately, it tends to create more slaves than rebels. So if you have this 11th gene key in your profile, or you're in a deep contemplation of it, have a long, hard look at your tendency to be drawn in by systems or ideologies that promise the light, the 11th city. This is going to be a good test of the gene keys, this one. Are they for real, or are they just another set of fantasies? Such a divide there is between the light itself and the promise of the light. And that's the nub of this whole gene key. And of course, the other side of this word, obscurity, is about being forgotten. It's about being lost in obscurity. But here we're referring to it on the inner world rather than on the outer. So you're lost in obscurity whenever you become a victim of your beliefs. I want to make this absolutely clear. There's nothing wrong with having a belief, but you have to be able to see that a belief is a construct of your mind. Because belief and knowing, like Carl Jung said, they're two very different things. So how do you tell whether something is false or genuine? Well, sometimes the only way is to go in. You go down the wormhole into the system or the teacher, and then your experience is the thing that shows you. So it's interesting that the 12th gene key, which is the next in the sequence after the 11th, and the programming partner here, is the shadow of vanity and the gift of discrimination, because that's how obscurity gets you. It feeds your vanity. It promises you riches, or it promises you the light, but only if you do such and such. So you have to learn the art of discrimination, to discriminate between the genuine voices and the less than genuine. And that's an essential aspect of any spiritual path. And you know, sometimes a mistake in that department, it's pure gold. So we needn't beat ourselves up, because a mistake, it shows us our tendency towards the inessential, towards something that hooks our beliefs, and that can be a massive wake-up call. So if you look, for example, at the field of health today, you can see the same thing. There's an army of doctors, experts, healers, therapists, shamans, and they all promise to help you with your health, whether that's through prescribing you medication or holding a purple amethyst over your third eye, or whatever it is. You know, a great deal of it's just obscurity. A great deal of it's simply the placebo effect. You know, you buy into a belief and it appears to work. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But at a certain point in your path, you have to realize that everything comes down to you, to what's inside you. So what's beneath all this? What is belief? It's something we decide in our mind. That's the key. Our mind becomes convinced of a truth, and then we put that truth into our body, into our DNA, and it manifests. And as I said, I'm not saying it's all rubbish, not at all. But I'm saying that at the shadow frequency, we tend to give away our authority to others because we want someone else to do it for us. It's like this whole gene keys business with your hologenetic profile. If I started offering readings, can you imagine how popular that would be? I'd be booked solid every day. It'd be a nightmare. And because we don't do it that way, it's a much harder sell. You have to do your own reading on yourself. You just can't believe what I'm saying. That's the whole problem with you in the first place. You won't take responsibility for your own life, your own health, your own purpose, your own relationships, your own karma. That's the whole gig. Think about science. Science is not supposed to be about belief. It's supposed to be absolutely open. But many scientists become believers too. They believe in theories. They believe in logic. They believe in their own opinions. But a good scientist, I tell you, a good scientist is never a believer. They remain always open. They are available for their views and perspective to be always changing and adapting. So yes, scientists should be the most open-minded people on the planet, right? As should religious people. But you see how obscurity works? Even scientists can obscure the truth. They can prove anything if they believe in it enough. They can become fanatics, even more than the religious people. And they then believe that only their view is right. And that's a sad situation. And that's only obviously some scientists and some religious people. The point is that obscurity, it robs you of creativity because you get caught up in this mental net. It's a net of ideas. And no matter how well intended it is, it keeps you from actually making any progress. It's not quite a dead end street, in fact. It's more like an eternal loop. Obscurity traps you. It distances you from the real inner light. So beware the siren song of belief. You don't want to believe. You need to know. And to know, you have to take your own journey, not someone else's. It's like these audios I'm doing. These are my contemplations on the 64 Gene Keys, and I hope they're inspiring for you. But you have to do your own journeys. You must find your unique path through this wisdom. And you must see them playing out in your life. That's why I don't create trainings and teachers. Because then I've created a system that actually obscures the truth and it looks like it has real substance. But then we stifle the magic. You see, obscurity is only about giving away your own inner light. It's fine to find a guide or to follow a system or any of these things, but you must be careful about your own beliefs. The system or the teacher is just a raft to get you to the other side. And sooner or later, you will have to step off the raft. And obscurity is our addiction to the raft, our addiction to seeking rather than finding, to believing rather than knowing, to dreaming rather than doing. The 11th gift of idealism. So the 11th gift is your way to ensure that you are never a victim of belief or obscurity. It will give you the lift and the clarity necessary to carry you all the way out of the confusion of the shadow frequency up into the more refined atmosphere that we call the light. Idealism is often seen as the opposite to realism. Again, I'd like to claim back this beautiful word. In the 60th Gene Key, I claimed back the word realism, and I hopefully imbued it with some long-needed magic to keep it from being so dry. And idealism has also been around a long time. In the Rig Veda, that's an ancient Hindu holy text, idealism was espoused as the notion that consciousness pervades everything in the universe. And many great philosophers and movements have picked up this idea and developed it. Plato, Kant, Hegel, Russell, Kierkegaard, they've all helped develop this concept down the centuries. But I don't want really to discuss metaphysics. Since we're talking about the gift frequency here, we're talking about creativity and action. So let's make this practical. To have an ideal at the core of your life is to live a life of great expansion and purpose. And the trick with the 11th gene key is to see that the ideal itself is not something literal and personal. And what I mean by this is that your ideal is simply the carrot that you use that draws your frequency upwards. So, for example, the highest ideal anyone can have, really, is to be committed to creating heaven on earth. But most people would say, well, that's not realistic. You know, you see how these words work? But that's not the point. This is what underpins the Christian gnosis and the Buddhist bodhisattva vow, that we must strive for the very highest, the most outlandish ideal. And then what happens is all our energies begin to organize themselves around that ideal. And obscurity is when we get caught in an expectation. I know this personally because when I first had my experience of the higher light, my mind refracted that as a series of images that I then thought I had to manifest those in the world. So, for example, I saw a castle, and I actually went there physically, and I saw the castle as a kind of symbolic Camelot where people could come and study higher consciousness. And people would come from all around the world to this beacon of the new consciousness. And I thought that was literal. But the 11th gene key operates through the right brain, through symbol and archetype. So you have to be very careful about becoming a victim of this kind of fantasy. The castle is a symbol for a great ideal, the ideal of synarchy, a higher organizing principle of virtue, service, and fellowship. And it may even manifest as a castle one day. One always has to stay open, right? But the point is that the ideal itself carries the light into our DNA, and it ignites the light in our DNA. And that's how the 11th gift works. Our ideal energizes us. It illuminates us. It enlightens us. It gets us out of bed in the morning with enthusiasm. It's the mental, emotional, and physical shell into which we can pour all our highest aspirations. So if, for example, you carry this ideal of a perfect world and you're in the business world, it will affect every decision you make. It will inform every relationship you enter into. It becomes an impulse at the core of your approach to business. And it's the same with relationships, health, family, eating, everything. Your ideal animates your life. So the higher and richer you can make it, the more power it will have in your life. The thing we need to understand about the light is that it's all pervasive. It unites all forms and manifestations of phenomena. So if, for example, you set yourself up as someone who channels the ascended masters, then you had better realize inside yourself that that's nothing more than a brand. The ascended masters are aspects of your higher consciousness. They're not up there, separate to your greater being. Otherwise, you're caught in obscurity and you'll capture others in obscurity. And it's all about vanity, because secretly it makes you feel special that the masters have selected you to be their vessel. You see what I mean? I don't wish to be harsh on the New Age, but these shadows really do not serve us. They only disempower. And as long as we get the joke, then it's okay to brand ourselves with these kinds of stories. But if we believe the story, then we get lost in it. Idealism is paired with the 12th gift of discrimination. That's its programming partner, remember? And that's the power to use an ideal without being caught in the dilemma of believing it as literal. So for millennia, the great mystical teachings have used the idea of the divine ideal as a technique to raise the frequency of our consciousness. And the ideal is real. At the siddhic level, as you'll see, the ideal is already here. But we need to learn to detach our ego from the ideal. And that's what spiritual maturity is, to my mind. To see through the spiritual ego. So if you have the 11th gift, or you're contemplating it, then use the beautiful richness of the right brain visions and archetypes in your life to launch your life onto a higher level. That is your greatest gift, to catch others on fire with the light that burns in your heart. Your gift is your heart, your love, your devotion. It's not your ideal. It's your willingness to stay open, to know that anything is possible. That creates such a powerful field in the world. It's not the brand, it's the product. And the product is you. The ideal is simply the delivery mechanism. So the true idealist knows this deeply in their being, and it's what makes them so deeply realistic. And that's the delicious paradox of the 11th Gene Key. The 11th Siddhi, light. Many of you listening to this or reading this will be familiar with the Hindu notion of the world being seen as a maya, an illusion or a construct created by the mind. To us here in the phenomenal world of object and matter and cause and effect, this seems like a distant and dreamlike notion at best. And mostly we might be tempted to see it as a kind of colourful ancient metaphor, but the only thing is, it's true. The world that most of us see and experience is not the real world. It's a dim reflection of the real world. The real world, which is a funny concept in itself, is that of pure light. We use the word light again as a metaphor here, because it isn't really light, but light is the closest concept to it. I'm talking about the light of consciousness. So let's do a little meditation. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath. And imagine your life for a moment. Your physical body, your home, your friends, your family, your car if you have one, your things. And now just imagine for a moment that none of that is real. It's all just part of a dream you once had. That's the view from the enlightened state. Okay, so let's go on. Now imagine that that life that you think is yours is shrouded in darkness. You can't see the truth. It's all been a lie, a fantasy. Everywhere you look, all you can see is darkness, obscurity. Look up, look down, look all around. It's all just dark. You're completely asleep. Now, somehow, miraculously, through the spirit of grace, you see a single pinprick of light in the darkness. Just a tiny speck. Watch that light. See its tremendous beauty as it hangs there in the darkness, an eye in the void. What is it? What is this light, this first light, this pure light? I'll tell you what it is. It's a single moment of pure awareness. Now imagine yourself going through your daily chores, getting up, putting on your clothes, eating, going to work, coming home, maybe shopping, eating again, going to bed again. All darkness, an unaware life, a sleeping life. But you had one moment in the day, one moment of pure awareness, a moment when everything paused. Maybe you were sitting down, maybe you were standing up, but for that short moment you were aware of the inner light shining. And all your thoughts ceased in that pause. It was wonderful. It was like a holiday from samsara, the endless wheel of life. Now look up again, and in the dark see another pinprick of light shining in the sky of your life, another moment of light. Now there are two lights. One leads to two, and now three, and another, and another, and another. And let the lights continue to form, like the first shining stars in the night sky. And your view of life is changing. You're becoming more mindful, more heartful, more aware. The moments of presence keep appearing in the gaps, in the pauses, between the breaths. They just keep coming. And the more you become aware of these moments, the more keep coming. Soon there are thousands of lights in that dark sky, even millions. And how beautiful they are. Now your daily life is filled with those moments. They well up every time you pause. Maybe when you're doing the dishes, maybe when the stranger engages you in a casual, meaningless conversation. Maybe when you find yourself sitting at a red traffic light in your car. Maybe listening to a piece of music. But now your life takes on a new meaning. A new higher purpose is shining through. Your ideal is burning strong in your breast. You find ways of stretching out those moments. You pause more and more often. You smile more. The tension is leaving your body. The anxiety is diminishing. The desires that led you out into the distractions of the world, your hunger to end your suffering, to block out the anxiety and the discomfort. It's all being funneled in one direction, to presence more of that light. And you know, at a certain point, you just become hooked. You find yourself spontaneously meditating, or maybe dancing, or maybe you're changing your life around to enable more presence to enter. And now when you look at that night sky that was your life, you see huge clusters of stars coalescing to form galaxies, radiant suns, and the background is falling away. At a certain point, there's more light than darkness. Now you really bring an intensity of focus to the dark patches. They leap into view, and you give them your breath, your attention, your compassion, these shadows. And one by one they diminish as the light cracks through from inside them. Now even your movement becomes a pause as the awareness saturates your daily chores and activity. Now your life is pristine and the final vestiges of darkness evaporate away. There's nothing now but the radiance of light. The pure awareness has extinguished all the shadow. Now the you that you thought of as you has also fallen away, and all that's left is the pure light, the light of consciousness. And that's you. That's who you really are. That's the 11th city, the glory of God, the ineffable radiance of the presence, the rainbow body. And it's within you right now. You are the peace that passeth all understanding. Tat Dvam Asi. That art thou. Namaste. I bow to the God inside you.